Hi, everyone. It's Jenny Heckman with Jenny's Tattletales. And today we have Christopher German, who is an American political dystopian author. And his book is called Whither We Tend. Hi, Christopher. How are you?
Hello. How are you? So good to be with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, I appreciate you coming on. And this is this is the first for us for the whole American political dystopian. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Whither We Tend?
Well, American political dystopian is really putting a fine tip on it, I think, or a fine point on the whole thing. I don't necessarily know it fits into any particular genre other than just good old American angstiness. And that's what Whither We Tend is about. You may have been experiencing some of the trials and tribulations of the political class these days, given what's happened in the last 6 months. It's amazing we still have a country, doesn't it? But this whole book presupposes the idea that we got through the election and things just got worse. It did get worse. The two main characters, Gus Spiros and Simon Gates, are experiencing the same political strife that we are in this country. And they take it a couple of years out, and Gus and Simon have a car accident. And from there, they both kind of spin out into a world of coming to reimagine America. And that's really what I'm trying to illustrate with this book is, if you take the extremes on both sides, if you're a Black Lives Matter activist, or if you're a Trump supporter, whichever extreme that you find yourself on, we all have the same commonalities. We all love America, and we are all part of the same nation. And if we wipe away the hate and we stop pointing fingers at each other and who's bad and who's good and what's bad and what's good, and we started saying, how can we work together to make a good country? That is really what this book is about. And it's using the mechanisms of the alt-right, and it's using the mechanism of the liberal, the crazy side, and all these things, and putting them all together in what I hope is a very fair and balanced way. And it's not fair and balanced in the Fox News sort of way. It's fair and balanced in a traditional journalist sort of way, where I spent a lot of years working in newspapers and radios and whatnot, and I've never really had a political stripe. And I tried not to have a political stripe in this book. So it's about trying to figure out, you know, what the politics of this country really are supposed to be about without taking any particular path down either extremis.
Oh, lovely. Okay. And it follows three different characters, you said.
There's classically two characters in this thing, and the worlds that surround each one of them. There's Simon Gates has his wife. I'm blanking on his wife's name right now.
I do that all the time.
I've got so many characters running around in my head right now. Simon has got his wife, and she is his world. And they are trying to negotiate the fact that they think they're being stalked and hunted down by a mercenary person from the alt-right, which is the person in Gus Spiros. Gus has Jamal, and Jamal is his right-hand man, so to speak. And the two of them are building an army together using RVs, of all things. And actually, I came up with the idea of using RVs before there was even that thing that happened in Tennessee. And that showed up on the news that day. And I'm like, oh, my God, they're doing what my book says. And it's been a continuing thing since November is I kind of been predicting this stuff. And one of the best reviews I've gotten so far is this is ripped straight out of the headlines, because kind of it is, but I wrote it before the headlines were written. So I swear I'm not a premonitionist. I don't see the future, but I did do it in this book. And so that's kind of what makes it a fun book to read.
Oh, that's really cool. I'm glad that it walks that fine line between both sides, because that really is important to just for the conversation to continue, is to have both sides. So that's really, really good. Now, if we were to turn this into a movie, and we were to have different actors and stuff play this, who do you see as characters? If you wanted, or first off, would you want this to be made into a movie? And second, who would be playing those characters for you?
Well, I've got a communications background, and if I wanted to make this a movie, I would have made it a movie. So I'm not really interested in making this into a movie. That being said, and quite frankly, I mean, I worked really hard on the words, you know, I put the words together. I don't want it to be dumbed down into a movie and have somebody else's interpretation on it. But if I had to pick somebody to be Gus and somebody to be Simon, I think Lee Majors, while he's not actively acting, I don't think, I don't even know if he's live still, but it's somebody who can hold a gun and who can be kind of authoritative, I think that would be the guy to be Gus. And he has to be a hard ass. And as far as Simon's a bit mealy-mouthed, and Simon needs a good dose of strength put into him. So I think I'm not going to pick a weak person. I don't want to call him a weak character, but I kind of like the malleability of Woody Allen for Simon. So,
yeah,
So it's Woody Allen versus Lee Majors. Who's going to win that?
I think that's amazing. What world does that happen in? So that's pretty great. That's pretty. And plus, with Lee Majors, you have the Bionic Man sound behind him.
No.
You can't see him without having the Bionic Man behind him.
I had to write that because Simon's wife has this amazing gift of picking up, same way my wife has, of picking up conversations. She can listen to three tables down and tell you exactly what they're saying. And so there's a scene in the book where Simon's wife is listening and he's awestruck that she can hear everything that's going on. He says, it's just like the Bionic Woman. And she pulls her hair back behind her and goes, no, 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 no. And I had to write that.
You did that really good. You could have been the sound effects guy on that. Okay, you said the thing about the movies. And so this is always an interesting kind of question. You hear about people who love, they have a favorite book and then it gets turned into a movie and they hate the movie. They absolutely hate the movie. Do you have the reverse of that? Is there a favorite movie that you have that you believe is better than the book?
Well, I have a favorite author, and one of my favorite authors, obviously it has to be kind of a military thing, and that's Tom Clancy. I love Jack Ryan, and I love all the characters in the Tom Clancy books, and I love how he attacks these things with such great detail into the military sides of things. The thing is, though, is I think Hunt for Red October, which is one of his first books about Captain Ramius, is whatever. But
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery. I mean, I think that is such a classic, amazing interpretation of that book. And I read the book after I saw the movie, so full disclosure, but I think I like the movie better than the book. By various reasons, but Alec Baldwin will always be Jack Ryan to me. James Greer will always be James Earl Jones. And then obviously Captain Ramius has to be Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, absolutely. let's see. So we were kind of talking about these genres and you have a lot of different, you know, American political and dystopian. Is there a genre that you would like to write that you have not written yet?
Well, see, I have a tough time picking a genre because I don't know where I'm going to land every damn day. I'm essentially a Gemini combined with an ADHD guy, so I have a tough time even picking out what cereal I'm going to have in the morning, let alone pick who I'm going to be and what kind of writer I'm going to be. So I can't necessarily pick a genre, but I do think the one theme that I have in all of my books, which I really, really like getting into, probably because I came from a broken family of divorced children and my parents beat the hell out of each other, is I like conflict. I really like examining the conflict. And in all of my books, especially Whither We Tend, that's an American conflict, and I'm examining that from two different populations of people. But my second book that I'm working on right now, The Sailboat, that is a marital conflict. And I think that is the theme that goes through, I want to take through all my books, is examining the conflicts between people and examining what happens in their different ways to be right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and right now is also a huge case study as well of just this psychological understanding of why people do the things they do and why their actions and how they've approached everything that has happened in the last few years and stuff too. So yeah, that whole idea of conflict and why they think the way that they think, how they do what they do, those kinds of things. So yeah, I could see that from both sides.
Fun learning the motivations, I think, behind them. Everybody comes from a position in an argument that they're right. Everybody thinks they're right. The guys that stormed the Capitol, they thought they were right. Both sides of the Civil War, the North thought they were right, the South thought they were right. Everybody thinks they're always right. But it's pretty clear that not everybody can be right all the time. And it is that sometimes violent resolution of who is the rightest that is, I think, what makes good literature. So I'm trying to write books about who becomes the rightest.
Got it. Okay.
Which is a horrible grammatical way to say that. And I'm, I am an author, but I obviously don't know the English language well.
And then do you have words that you kind of live by or a motto that you kind of live by?
Well, I'm learning who I am now. I'm going through this evolution of soul, so to speak. For the longest time, I was that sailing guy, and I'm still that sailing guy if you want to find me on Twitter and Instagram and all that kinds of good stuff. But accordingly, I always would back to Hunt for Red October, as I loved the words of Ramius at the end of that in that movie, and he talks about Columbus, which is a total BS. Columbus didn't actually say this, but he says, you know, the sea will grant each man new hope as sleep brings dreams of home. Well, Columbus never said that, but it's a great idea. And I always enjoyed the optimism of going to sea, and I always enjoyed what came on the high tide. And I always enjoyed the next day when it comes to the ocean and the maritime lifestyle. And I've kind of abandoned that idea now that I'm an author and I'm putting words to paper and I'm planning out the existence of everything. And I have this little fixed little empire that I sit in my little trailer in the desert and put my words and spin my little tales. Yeah. And so I don't have that same kind of adventure in my world anymore. So I don't have any particular words that I live by now. And hopefully by the time I get my third or fourth novel out and I get accepted as an author, maybe I will do better. But I imagine Twain had the same problem when he stopped being a steamboat captain and became an author. I imagine he had the same kind of comeuppance and tried to figure out who the hell he was. And I don't know how, obviously he did well at it. So I'm hoping I'm equally successful at it, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I actually just started reading Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. I hadn't read that in a long, long time. And some of those people, the older time authors, they really did have a way of, and maybe because of their life experience or the way that they were, I don't know. I love the language of that time. And I, Mark Twain, all of that was just so amazing. So.
Well, I find it actually absolutely awestruck that, you know, look at somebody like Hemingway, who wrote, you know, half dozen books. He didn't write a ton of books, but he wrote every single one on a typewriter. And if you look at the Twain didn't even have a typewriter. Twain wrote it out by hand.
Yeah.
And the editing process and the producing of the book and trying to go through it. And if you screwed up anything in the chapter, you had to go back and rewrite the whole thing.
Yeah.
That must have been an arduous, horrible process.
Incredible.
And now we have people churning out books on, you know, Google Docs, and you could change the entire ending of the book by hitting delete and put a whole new one in there that you copy and paste from some other book. And it's like, this is just it's such an easy world we live in now to produce books. Everybody should be producing a book right now.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why I'm doing this, because I'm doing what everybody.
everybody. Yeah. But yeah, Mark Twain, all of those guys that too, I mean, just, and that they are so relevant today as they were back then. That's the artistry of it. That is just like, oh wow, this is just totally incredible. So yeah.
I think like Shakespeare, I mean, Shakespeare was writing with a quill pen on parchment paper in 16th century Elizabethan England. And his work is still as salient today as it was the day he put it on the stage.
It's incredible.
That is an author. That is somebody that knows how to write. And I can only hope to even be close to as effective to that when 300 years from now, somebody downloads my ebook and they say, page 12 is messed up. I hope they do that.
Control Alt Delete. Okay, I think we did get like half. I think we got about halfway through. I do have to tell you one thing though, Christopher. When when you were talking about the, so I wrote a political thriller as well. I haven't published it because when I wrote it, it was about maybe 7 years ago. And I wrote them in different chapters and kind of essentially different vignettes is what I kind of did. And I wrote them all shooting and I wrote some other things like that. And it was very, very bizarre, but everything that has happened over the last little bit is all in my book. I actually have, it's from 7 years ago, and every single thing has happened. So when you were saying that, I was just sitting there going, yeah, isn't it weird?
It works out, doesn't it? You're like a prophet.
It is. It's like you're living in some kind of sci-fi thing, but you know, the whole thing with the election, the whole thing with it, I mean, all of it, it's all written down in a book. In there, and if I had published it 7 years ago, nobody would have believed it. I mean,
that was exactly it. I was worried that And this is how I'm such a new author, is I was writing this book in November and December, and then the election happened. I'm like, I have to get this thing published literally within days of the election, or else nobody's going to want to read this book. It's not going to make any sense. And now it's like, I mean, if this thing's not going to actually get read by anybody for the next year, and it's such a slow process with writing and you know, getting consumed by the readers and whatnot. I had no idea how slow this was going to be.
So you did talk about some of the characters in your book. If you wanted to hang out with one of them, who would it be, and what would you do?
I think that my favorite character to hang out with would be Jamal, because Simon's a little mealy-mouthed and Gus is a little too hardcore, but Jamal is cool, and I think he would be he'd be the guy that I could talk to the most and I could get along with the most, because he's the most affable of all the characters. Gus finds him in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and he's a nighttime manager for a hotel chain. And Gus says, I got a better deal for you. Why don't you help me take over the United States? And Jamal says, all right, I got nothing else going on for me. I might as well do that. So they hop in an RV and they drive down to Florida and they start an army. And, you know, Jamal is just so cool about everything and he takes it so easy. And then he goes up to Montana and he handles that pretty well. So I'm a pretty dominant personality, so I think Jamal and I would get along the best.
Oh, that's kind of cool. And it sounds like he's kind of a fly by the seat of your pants kind of guy.
He's just cool. He's just laid back, and the world does not flex that guy at all. And that's all, you know, I got to appreciate that kind of personality.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So how about, what's your writing space like? Do you like it quiet? Do you have a system when you're putting together your story? Actually, this is a several part question. Are you a plotter or pantser? What kind of space do you like to write in? And, you know, what do you do for development of your characters? So it's kind of a three-parted question there.
Well, the big thing for me, as I've mentioned, I'm profoundly ADHD, which is why I have never written before in my life, because I was actually just diagnosed about a year ago. Oh. And so I've just been on medication, and now I have found the ability to write. So I really have to stick to a habit of getting into the writing realm, which means I have to get up, take the dogs for a run. We run up a hill over here. There's a big cavern over here. We run up the hill and burn off a bunch of energy, come back, take my Strattera, and then I sit down and I write. And the nice part is I'm here in the desert and I'm really alone. So it's pretty quiet and I don't get too many interruptions, because the second anything interrupts me, I'm no longer able to write and the day is done. Yeah. But I'm a morning writer. I have to do it early in the morning and I have to do it completely by myself with no interruptions whatsoever. And you know, but every once in a while, like last night, I was having some cocktails with my wife and we were sitting there playing cards. I said, you know what? Hold on a sec. I got something I got to write. And I ran inside and I wrote an entire scene in the book. And so it happens when it happens. As far as plotting the book out or planning the characters out, I don't do that. I tend to think books are a lot like children. And you have to guide them through the first 10 to 12 years/chapters, as the case is, books are measured in chapters, children are measured in years. But you know, once they get to about 10 or 12, they start to develop their own life. And at that point, you know, you kind of just say, hold on and say, well, let's see where you go and let's see what happens. And the nice part with a book is if you screw it up, you can always throw it out. With children, you have to stick them in prison.
Yeah. But,
But so, yeah, I don't really plan the characters. I don't necessarily plan the storyline. I'm not a planner. I write the first sentence and I just hang on for dear life until the end.
Yeah. Okay. I went to a conference one time and one of the best pieces of advice I ever heard is, sometimes paint yourself into a corner and see what happens, you know, put yourself into a situation where they just you can't possibly get out of it and then get out of it. And I thought, I always have that kind of in the back of my head, and it's really, really great advice. And some of the greatest stuff has come from doing that. So it's a good way to be. I'm kind of a plantster. I plot it out and then I have my plot points and then it's like, okay, you know, I need to get there, and how I get there sometimes varies, but you sound to me like you're more of a true pantser. So just fly by the seat of your pants, see what sticks.
Well, and that is the case. And you know, the thing is that, like with this book I'm writing right now, The Sailboat, I got him stuck in St. Augustine, and you're in St. Augustine. It's beautiful weather. There's manatees swimming by. There's cocktails every night. There's beautiful sunsets. Why would you ever want to leave? And I've got them there, and they have to sail down south. That's the whole point of this book. But I can't get them out of the town. So I came up with this, and I'm a giant prude, by the way. And so coming up with the solution for getting them out of that part is I had them propositioned by another couple, and they had to leave first thing in the morning the next day and get out of town in a hurry. So it's something you kind of have to, I'm not a very courageous writer. And all of a sudden I say these things and I'm like, I can't believe I just made my character do that. Oh my gosh.
Well, that's part of being a writer too. You get to try on different lives. It's pretty cool.
That's exactly why I can tell you the sailboat is not an autobiography in any way, shape or form, because that is not me.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess my last question would be, what would you most like to say to your readers and the listeners that are out there right now?
Well, I think most people, I think when they hear political dystopia, they get kind of glazed over and they say, oh my God, it's another politics book. And politics is a pill we have to swallow these days, but it's not one that's going down very easily. So spending your spare time reading a book about it is not necessarily, I think, what a lot of people would like to do. And if I have to admit it, I probably shouldn't have started with a political novel to be my writing career's start. That being said, this book is not a politics book. This book is a book about, and I'll show it to you. Here it is.
Oh yeah.
Twitter Retend. Yes. Right there. It's not a politics book. It's a humanity book, I think. And it's our responses as Americans to the politics. And if you're looking for a creative way to get either your conservative tendencies or your liberal tendencies out of your system without having to blow something up, I do hope you'll pick up the book and at least take a look at it. And I think what'll happen is you're getting through the first chapter, you're going to get attached to the thing and you're going to want to know what happens to Simon and Gus. At least that's what people tell me happens. And it's a pretty quick read for 400 pages. You really fly right through the thing. So take a look at it. It's free on Kindle download. And if you don't like it, I'll give you the money back.
Wow, on Kindle look download. At you. And you do have some works coming up. So when do you think that the book two, like you said, maybe this might be a trilogy, maybe not. But do you have plans for when the next one might come out?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not going to write another book if nobody wants to read it. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But right. That being said, I have a chapter I'm stuck on right now. I'm at 20 chapters into the second book, and all of a sudden, Gus is stuck on the Navajo reservation down in Arizona, and he's had a severe injury because he was in a helicopter crash. And I got to figure out how to get Gus out of the desert. And I don't feel equipped to write that until I go down and actually visit the people on the reservation. And right now, the Navajo reservation is one of the most put upon places on the planet right now with COVID, and it's shut down and nobody's allowed, nobody's in, nobody's allowed out. They're going through a real tough time down there. So I'm not allowed to go on the Navajo reservation.
Yeah.
So until I can actually go to that area, I don't really feel that I am equipped to write that chapter. So that's why I'm stuck on the second book. And that's why I started the sailboat. But as soon as I can write that, then we can finish the war and then we can get on rebuilding things.
Yeah, I do. You know, I think research is extremely important, and I love to hear that you care enough about it so much that you need to go there to find out it firsthand. That really is important.
Would you write more than one book at a time? You know, authors that some of them write 2-3 books at the same time. Would you write something else while you're waiting for the research on this one?
Well, and that's exactly what I did. Is I started the. I wasn't going to write the sailboat because, quite frankly, I'm the sailing guy. Everybody expected me to write that book. Why wouldn't you write a book about sailboats? Everybody said, oh, you wrote a politics book. Why didn't you write a book about sailing? Well, I didn't want to write a book about sailing. Yeah. I wanted to write a book about politics. But so now I wrote the sailboat so I can get those people off my back and they can read that book while I'm coming up with the third book. And I also have another book sitting in the back of my head, which is going to involve War of the Heavens and how the angels fought and kicked Satan out of heaven. I want to write a book about that and fictionalize that tale as well. So that's sitting in the back of my head. But I have about 25 books just warring around my head and a couple of movies I got to shoot. So I just have too much to do and not enough time to do it.
Right, exactly. I think that is that that's a writer's life, isn't it? I have a lot going around in my head too. So I have to say this was really fun. It was such a pleasure to get to know you. And you do actually, let's do a little plug for your podcast because you have a podcast as well. And what
I must admit, you guys inspired me to do my podcast.
Really?
The Authors Exchange came out. I saw a post about your podcast, and I'm like, you know what? That's such a great idea. And I was the administrator of the Facebook group, the Authors Exchange, where it's all independent authors that are helping each other review each other's books and each other sell books. And I said, what better way than to talk to these people on a podcast and help them sell their books by doing what I do. So the Authors Exchange, it's available for download on every major podcast download, as well as on YouTube. And it airs on Fridays at noon, and you can download it and share it with your friends and all that kinds of stuff. And if you're an author who wants to get out there and get your word out there, certainly come to Jenny's Tattletales. But then when you're done with that, come over to the Author Exchange.
I love that. Yeah, I think, and it is such a great community, isn't it? I mean, I know that this is your first book that you've got coming out that you've got the other ones coming out. But, I think authors are really, really awesome people. And I think that they are so great and supportive of one another when they don't have to be. And so doing something like this and having the exposure on a platform and a medium like this is such a great way to really get to know somebody who is probably typically most of the time you hear about authors being introverts. So it's a nice way to kind of get to know them.
Well, and that's exactly it. One of my interviews last week with Dan Doherty, who's the author of Save the Tomatoes for Packy, he was talking about running and how running is a very isolated sport and you don't have any help in that. And the truth of the matter is that runners are the most team-oriented people whatsoever. They support each other like crazy. If you look at the Boston Marathon, there's always people cheering each other on. Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what we're doing with the authors, especially with independent authors, it doesn't hurt me at all if you sell books. There's more than enough ideas out there that we can all share the limelight. We can all support each other. So if I can help you sell books, you help me sell books, we all work together and it's spreading the information around the world. And that's a good thing for everybody, I think.
I really love that.
I totally agree. Did you find that authors have a certain resistance to doing anything that has to do with podcasts and video? I mean, we found some authors that we were able to turn around and then it became one of their best experiences. And those were some of the highest, most popular episodes we had, but there were some authors that they have a really strong resistance of embracing any platform like a podcast or a video to promote their books. And to me, I'm a marketer, so I don't understand why they would have that problem, but I know.
Well, I think that a lot of people choose to write books because I think it's a very safe way to let your inner feelings out. And it's a very controlled way where you can choose which words you want to go out there and you can choose the way that it gets presented. When you're doing the verbal communication with the world, or worse yet, if you have a camera in your face, you don't get to hide behind the words. You don't get to hide behind the protections of a publicist and an editor and all the other things that are out there. And so it's an exposing thing. But I think from a reader's perspective, getting to know the authors and getting to know the persona of the authors gives another dimension to the book that is just not had just by reading the black and white words.
I totally agree with you. And that's what I love the most about what we are doing here, because I learned so much more about books or an author. I mean, I discovered authors that I probably would have never discovered before.
Yeah, it's great. It really is a great medium. So congratulations on yours as well. And really thank you so much for coming on here today. And also, if you want to learn more about Christopher German, he is on our page today doing his author interview on the Jenny's Tattletales. And also, if you want to check out his links to how to buy his books, you want to go to Jenny Tattletales because we'll have the links, or you can go to thechartedlife.net, which is your website. And thank you, really. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. And I am going to sing your praises through the heavens because I want to get you guys out on my podcast as well at some point. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have a scheduler or something where we could schedule something?
Yeah, we schedule every Monday at noon. Is typically how we do it. I'm actually scheduling two a week now because I have so many people backed up.
That's how we feel.
Yeah, and that's the thing is if you open a microphone and you say anybody can come talk, anybody does come talk.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
But no, I'll tell you what, I'll message you and you tell me what day you want to be on there, and we'll do a reverse of this, and I'll interview you guys.
Nice, lovely, perfect. Love it. All right, well, thank you so much, Christopher, and best of luck with you and your books. Plural, because you're going to write a whole bunch more now. But congratulations on your new release.
The floodgates have opened. Expect a lot more books. Thank you so much, ladies.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.